what we need is more real evidence from policy to understand which are the only policy instruments that can curb corruption without creating adverse labor market consequences to workers.
Welcome to Vox DevTalks. My name is Tim Phillips. Well, we're back in Brazil for this week's podcast. In previous episodes, we've examined the labour market consequences of political affiliation in Brazil and whether sacked Brazilian workers become more likely to commit crimes afterwards. This week, it's the consequences for workers if they're employed by a firm that is sanctioned for corruption. Cristiane Scherman of Princeton has done the research, and she joins me now. Cristiane, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hi, Tim. Thank you for having me.
This is about the consequences of something called corporate debarment. What is debarment? What's it used for?
So debarment is when a business company is excluded from competing for and having contracts with the government for a specific period of time. So the idea is that it can be a heavy punishment for companies engaged in corrupt activity. But it can also help to deter corporate wrongdoing by increasing the cost of corruption. So if you imagine that the company, they weigh the cost and benefit when they decide to whether to engage in a corrupt activity or not, in this case, debarment is also a deterrent mechanism because it makes punishment very costly in case they get caught on criminal activity. So at the end of the day, debarment can also incentivize integrity in the relationship between companies and the government.
Is debarment just used in Brazil or is it used in lots of countries?
It's actually much more common than people think. Debarment is used in many countries like Brazil, China, France, the US and the UK. And even international agencies like the World Bank, they have their own debarment policies.
I know that corruption has been in the news. It's been in a political debate in Brazil for many years now. Is the business culture in Brazil, would you regard that as particularly corrupt?
Yeah, Brazil is very well known for, you know, demanding regulation for companies to comply. So in the ranking organized by the World Economic Forum, Brazil's rank is really low in terms of burden of government regulation. So it means there are a lot of opportunities for firms to engage in corrupt practices like bribery, collusion, and over-invoicing. And another striking fact is that Brazil is also very well known for one of the biggest corruption scandals in history. It disclosed a huge bribery plot involving politicians and major business companies to get contracts with the government at higher price. So the investigation at the end of the day led to many business executives and famous politicians to prison. So these are two examples of how the business culture can be very corrupt in Brazil.
Is that the Lava Jato, the car wash?
Yeah, exactly. Famous leverage.
Okay, so what does it take to get debarred in Brazil, therefore? What does someone have to prove that you have done to get debarred?
So let's take a step back. So in 2013, there was a huge investigation that uncovered a bribery plot involving business companies to get government contracts. So thousands of Brazilians went to streets to protest, and the Congress reacted to that by enacting the anti-corruption law. So the anti-corruption law, among other things, increasing the cost to companies to engage in corruption. The idea is very simple. So the idea is how debarment works. So in general, there are media reports, whistleblowing, audit reports, or other sources that potentially suggest that a business company is involved in some corrupt practice. There can be wrongdoing in the bidding process, fiscal fraud, or fraud in the contract that are held with the public administration. So the government agent, they start an investigation to see if the company is actually guilty or not. And if the company is found guilty, it's debarred. It means that it's excluded from having contact with any government agency and participating in the bidding process during a specific period of time. And the company they are included in the debarment database that is maintained by the federal government is a publicly available database. And the other thing is that the company might be required to pay fine. And some of the content might be disseminated by the mass media like government gazette or relevant newspapers. So, and then after serving the sentence, the government revoked it and the firm might be able to have contact with the government again.
So for the firm, the consequences of debarment is no government contracts and a fine, but for a limited length of time.
Yes, if for a limited length of time. For this paper, I'm not able to speak more about FIND because the information on FIND are not that good in the data set. But it's mostly about losing contact with the government, but also about people knowing who the corrupt funds are.
So what then tends to be those secondary consequences for revenue and for employed staff? What have you found out the firms lose there?
So to get that, it's not a good idea to simply compare a company who are debaucherous to those who are not, because they are very different at the beginning. For instance, the debaucherous company, they are larger in size and payroll. They are more concentrated in some economic sectors like construction, and they're more likely to have contact with the government. So what I do is to try to build a matching strategy where I try to get a group of companies that similar to companies that have been debarred, and I mentioned that I can actually observe from the data before debarring. Dimensions like location, size, and economic activity. So I can essentially compare companies who have been effectively debarred to those who have not been debarred before and after debarring. So what I find is that after debarring, the debarred company, they experienced on average 50% decline in the total number of employees, and they are 15% more likely to shut down after debarment relative to those who are not debarred. I also find sizable decline in wage bill, which is a proxy for revenue.
And Christiane, you can be sure using this matching method that means it's not a consequence of the activities they were doing already, because I'd be thinking that companies that were struggling already would be more likely to behave in a corrupt way just because they needed the money.
Yeah, that's a good question, but I think like based on my data is kind of very unlikely, because when I look at the raw data, I don't see that the debarred company, they were like in a negative trajectory before debarment. And those companies, they have very stable trend before debarment, but I do observe sharp decline in employment and wage bill immediately after the shock.
Now, you set out before those three dimensions of the punishment, the fines, the removal of government business, and the reputational damage. Can you attribute the decline in business performance to any one of those dimensions in particular?
I think I find evidence on this channel that it's because they cannot do business with the government and because of the reputational channel. But the bulk of the fact, they mostly come from not being able to do business with the government. So I find from the data, what I effectively see from the data, that most of the punished companies, they had contract with the government before debarment, and they are much less likely to get this contract after debarment. This suggests that not being able to do business with the government is a huge, sizable demand shock for them. Another potential mechanism can come from the reputational damage. For instance, now everyone knows who these corrupt companies are, and it's possible that this company, they might struggle to attract or retain clients or have trouble to get credit because of their reputational damage. And this, of course, can affect firm performance. But the problem is that I don't have a good data to directly test for that. But I do find some evidence of negative stigma for workers who have previously worked for a debarred company, but it's relatively small. Mm. The bulk of the effects still come from not being able to do business with the government.
Let's talk about the consequences for those workers, because your paper talks about the consequences for individual workers of having worked for a company that was debarred. Where do you get the data for this, though?
As I said, the debarment database is publicly available at the federal government website. Anyone can have access to the database to know who these companies are. The labor market data also have information on companies, so it means that we can essentially follow workers at this company before and after debarment.
What are the financial consequences for workers in general, though? Do they all lose money or just the ones that lose their jobs?
The way that I try to look at what exactly happened to workers is that I look at the workers from debarred to non-debarred companies, and I try to follow them over time, regardless of whether they're still working at the same company or not. What I find is that these workers from debarred companies are much less likely to be employed. And because of that, they also get lower earnings after debarment. However, workers who remain employed in this firm, they do not have lower earnings after debarment. So this suggests that workers who have lower earnings, they have lower earnings because they lose their jobs.
And you did mention that there is evidence of a stigma there for those workers after they've worked for that company.
Yeah, I tried to get a sense of whether part of the earnings loss comes from the negative stigma for having worked at the body company. Now, everyone knows who this company is, so it's possible that this worker might have a hard time to find a new job. But these workers are also unemployed, so it's difficult to know if the earnings losses are coming from displacement, from job displacement, or negative stigma. So to overcome this problem, this challenge, I try to take a sample of workers who have been laid off before the bombing and track them over the years, even they are working in different companies. So the idea is to see if there is different employment after the bombing. If I observe any different employment on earnings, it has to be explained by the reputational damage. It cannot be explained by displacement because they have been displaced before. So I do find some evidence that these workers who have been connected to the company in the past are also negatively impacted over time because of the reputational damage. But the estimates are somehow relatively small. So most of the negative consequences of the bombing do come from unemployment.
Now, no one wants to look the other way, corruption, but it does seem slightly unfair, doesn't it, that many of these workers, as you say, these are large firms, many of these workers have no control over whether their management engages in corrupt practices or not. Is it fair that they take the punishment, that they lose their jobs and earn less as a result?
It's not fair. That's why I started to look at this question, because I saw this happen in my family and I thought, it's not fair what is going on. Ah. But this is precisely why we need more evidence about how anti-corruption policies are also affecting workers. And the government should take into account potential costs to workers when deciding which are the best policy instruments to fight against corruption.
Yeah, well, so what's the alternative then? Are there alternative policies that could adequately punish firms for corruption without having these labour market consequences for the workers who at the moment are having to bear a lot of the cost?
It's a great question. It's a great research question. I think it's very difficult to think about alternative like that. One option is to consider punishing specific individuals like business owners or managers that are found to be directly engaged with corruption. The problem is that the threat of punishment itself will probably be very weak. It's very easy for the firm to just replace a manager and not take a real accountability for the misbehavior. Another option is to invest more in policy that can increase transparency and avoid corruption from the beginning, right? So the government don't have to rely on sanctions. So if there is no corruption, there is no need to punish companies, so workers would not be affected. But we don't know much about it. What we need is more real evidence from policy to understand which are the other policy instruments that can curb corruption without creating adverse labor market consequences to workers.
It's a very difficult question to resolve. One thing that we do know is that it will be in the debate in Brazil for many years to come. Cristiane, thank you for talking to me about it today.
Thank you very much.
The paper is called The Employee Costs of Corporate Debarment in Public Procurement, and Cristiane Scherman is the author. You just heard from her there. Cristiane, I believe that it's a forthcoming publication in AEJ Applied Economics.
Yes, it's going to be forthcoming in January of next year.
Congratulations on that. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe. Go on, do it now. You will find us wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, there are always articles about the papers we feature at voxdev.org.